Blog Talk Radio.
With me, as always, the very outspoken, the one and only Joy Nugs.
Yeah, it's the one and only Joey Nugs. You're tuned in to another wonderful episode of Carolina Wrestling Live. Call us right now. We're live on the air. So anyone listening, call us at 347-850-1893. That's 347-850-1893. If you're an independent wrestler, give us a call. Or if you're a wrestling fan and you want to ask a question, your comment, or you just want to give a shout-out, tell us about your upcoming wrestling show. Call us up. We're here for you. Go ahead, James. Let's start the show, buddy.
Yeah, call that number to participate. All right, and our guest tonight, we have Terry Houston and Big Country. And standing by right now, we have Big Country. Let's talk to him right now. Welcome back to Carolina Wrestling Live Radio, Big Country.
Hey, what's up, James? What's up, Nugs?
Hey, what's going on, Big Country?
Oh, nothing much. Just winding down the day, getting ready to go to bed.
I hear you, brother. I hear you.
My old broadcasting partner, Big Country, back on Carolina Wrestling Live Radio for one night only. Well, Big Country, you got a big match coming up this Friday night at Milestone. Why don't you tell us all about it?
Well, it's pretty special. It's going to be the last wrestling show that's ever put on at Tremont because after this month, the city has bought out the land. They're tearing down all the good places you used to be able to wrestle at in Charlotte and putting up condos that most people can't afford. So, you know, Milestone Wrestling's went in there and I think it's going to be a good show. I think it's going to be a crazy show for anybody that likes a lot of blood and violence and everything like that. But I will be wrestling for the first time ever Hojo the Devil Devlin, which I've known Hojo for a long time. He's a legit badass, you know. He's a tough guy. He knows how to wrestle. He knows how to fight. And, you know, so do I. So I think me and him butting heads is going to be well worth the price of admission.
Okay, wow. Tell us about your opponent for many of those who do not know about him. Tell us about him and his style and what to expect.
Well, you know, he's, like I said, he knows how to be technical, but I don't expect much technical wrestling out of this match. Basically, it's just going to be a fight. The guy's been around for a long time. I've known him for about a good 5 or 6 years now, and you know, never had the opportunity to work him, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it because, you know, as anybody that knows me knows, I love a good fight, and I don't back down from anybody. So I expect to see how far I can throw him, how hard I can slam him, and how quickly I can pin his shoulders to the mat or make him tap out, you know.
Okay, this is not a name I've heard in North Carolina very often. Where is he from? Where does he mainly wrestle at?
He mainly wrestles, he's been wrestling a lot of his own promotion, I believe, is MWF down in Lincoln, North Carolina. They do a lot of, so it's kind of like a family promotion. A lot of the guys basically stay in that area, and they mainly just work for that promotion. I don't believe in that. I believe you need to get out and, go everywhere you can, wrestle everywhere you can, and soak up as much knowledge as you can as long as you can do it. But that doesn't make him any less dangerous, He's, like I said, he knows how to fight. He knows it doesn't go down easy. I mean, I'm looking to pack a lunch on this one. It's going to be a long night, but like I said, it's going to be worth the price of admission.
And what are your favorite memories at the Tremont Music Hall?
Well, I've got a lot of them, me, along with the defunct XWW group, the first ever wrestling match was put on at Tremont by XWW. My first night there, I got to team up with my friend and my tag team partner, Craig Huffman, as the Weapons of Mass Destruction, the XWW Tag Team Champions. And we had one hell of a match. I believe, Mr. Nuggs, you were present for that. You were actually in our corner.
I was honored to be bestowed the privilege to be in your corner representing you at that time.
Yeah, I suffered my first hematoma in my eye when one of the Just Us League decided to shove an elbow in it. But like usual, we were victorious in that match. I was pretty honored for that match because we got a ECW, This Is Awesome, and a Holy Shit chant all in the same match. And, I've got to experience a lot of things. I got to wrestle Barbarian for the first time in that building.
I remember that match quite well.
Oh, I remember the cane across the back. Who can forget that?
I had a whelp across my back from when the Barbarian took my own cane from me and hit me across the back with it. You literally could see the handle of the cane for a week and a half on my back. So anybody ever tries to say wrestling is fake, you've never been hit by the Barbarian.
That's the funny part is people were asking, oh, man, is that real? It's like, yeah, why don't you come on down and let me smack you in the back with a cane and see if it's real. But, I got to wrestle Matt Hardy in that building. Any wrestler's dream come true to wrestle somebody that they've admired and watched on TV. Chris Hamrick. People don't give Chris Hamrick the credit that he does. The man is a legend. I mean, he's so fun. And even to this day, he could out-wrestle 90% of the young kids on the indies. I mean, I wish I was still watching that guy on TV because, the guy's got his own bump named after him, the Hamrick bump, which I don't think he really likes to do it.
The sickest-looking bump. He does that suicide, comes through the top and second rope, and he goes and it comes straight down and takes the ass bump.
Yeah.
And I've seen it firsthand right in front of me in a wrestling match in Columbia, South Carolina. And, man, it makes you want to grab your – I bit my finger from squealing like a girl at ringside because I swear to God it was one of those, oh, my God, moments because it's right there in front of you.
Yeah, the bad part about it is it looks so sick. They asked them to do it over and over again. It's like, it hurts. No matter how sick it looks and how awesome people think it is, this stuff hurts. Anybody that's gone to the ring and just taken a bump, that stuff hurts. And to do stuff like that, you got to really love this business to keep putting yourself through that type of pain and misery. But, Tremont Music Hall was very good to us. They opened their doors to wrestling. It opened up the doors to a lot of other wrestling. Gouge Wrestling was down there. PWX Wrestling. Now Milestone Wrestling. And even Trans-South tried their shot at it. But, John Hayes, I give that man a lot of respect. He runs a Top Nuts club. He's got a lot of national acts to come through there. He's always been a straight-up guy. I consider him a friend. And, I hate the fact that the city is doing what they're doing and causing him to have to shut his doors, because Tremont Music Hall has been a staple of Charlotte. People think Charlotte, North Carolina, there's not very many places you can say, you know, beside, you know, even the Time Warner Cable Arena, you know, it wasn't the Time Warner Cable Arena when, you know, people remember it. Bojangles was the Cricket Arena, you know, I mean, everything's changed around here, but that was one thing that you could say was always a mainstay. And now, because the city wants to build condos for people that, you know, probably can't even afford it anyways, they're going to tear down a staple of Charlotte. And I think that's, you know, bullshit. I hate when, you know, cities come in and do crap like that, you know. It's a place that people call it home. It's a place that people can go and forget the troubles of their lives and, you know, go and watch a concert, go and watch some wrestling, go and watch some comedy, you know, whatever they wanted to do. And I'm really going to miss it. And I'm proud to be able to wrestle at the last wrestling show that's going to be put on there.
Yeah, you should be honored. You wouldn't happen to need a manager that night, would you?
Dude, I actually had a couple guys I wanted to get on the show, and it is so ridiculously overbooked right now that
we were on here yesterday, and we were talking about it. He has, I think, 8 matches booked, and he was saying how overbooked it. People kept calling and trying to get on that show because it is the last show at Tremont, and that's an honor to ever work that building. If you've never been to Tremont and ever worked that building, you ought to go out and see that last show because the building itself just has a great presence to it by itself, but the wrestling out there is just phenomenal. I've had some of the best times out there at Tremont.
Oh, I mean, the building itself, it's a little rugged. Some people might call it a little rundown. But the fact of the matter is, you know, it's, you don't go in there worried about breaking something or, you know, it's a place you can go and just, you know, forget about all your worries, man. It's, you know, it's not stuck up. It's not, oh, you know, a dress code and all this crap. You can just go there and be yourself and have fun. And there ain't very many places like that around. I mean, every other place, even the chop shops getting messed with by the city, even they're having to shut down and you know, they're going to bulldoze the place. And that was another place where, you know, XWW and Joey Nuggs and Big Country, you know, they wrestled there. You know, other promotions there with another promoter and screwed it up for everybody. But, you know, we got to work there, and it was hot as hell that day, I remember. And that was the first time I got one of Joey Nuggs' famous canes busted over my head. But, you know, it's made for great memories, and, you know, I just hate to see it go.
Well, what would you say is your favorite venue in Charlotte?
You know, they all have their own little, you know, their own little special spot for me, you know. Tremont's always going to be good because it's the first place I wrestled for in Charlotte. You know, it's, like I said, the owner is awesome. The fans were awesome. And, you know, it's always going to hold a special spot. The Chop Shop, like I said, even though we were sweating our ass off in that what did they call it? They called it a dressing room, but it was more like a hallway. And you couldn't go out the back door because the alarm would sound off. And, you know, but I had an awesome three-way match with Sephiroth and Sweet Dreams.
I remember that match.
Oh, yeah. You know, Charlotte used to be so rich in wrestling culture. Now it's like, you know, because they're opening up so much of these big venues and everything, it's hard for wrestling to get the respect it deserves in Charlotte nowadays. And, you know, I wrestled a while for Fireball's Grindhouse Wrestling Show, which was also held at Tremont. And, you know, it was good to wrestle on there because, you know, it's a wide genre of, you know, of entertainment that all together in one building that you don't really get everywhere. You know, you got Lucha Vavoom that does it, but, you know, they're always around everywhere else, so it's, like, hard to get to. And it's sad to see that, you know, that the places that make it fun to be at, you know, be yourself, are getting tore down by the city just to build up condos that, I mean, they're going to be so overpriced, you know, and it's just, I don't understand it.
Hey, Big Country, we got Terry Houston standing by. Would you like to stick around?
Yeah, I'll stick around.
Yeah, stand
okay,
alone.
Okay, you got Terry standing by. Let's
say hi to him. Party and talk about wrestling.
Terry Houston, welcome to Carolina Wrestling Live Radio once again.
How you doing, brother?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm making it, man. Just making it. Just listening to y'all talk about Tremont.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a big show coming up at Milestone coming up this Friday night. Tell us about your upcoming match at the Tremont.
It's myself and Colt 45 against Belton Creedmoor and Mike Levy in a cinder block and light tube match.
Wow.
Okay, tell us, how are you preparing for this?
If that match name by itself doesn't draw people into the building, people aren't paying attention. Say that again. What is the name of the match?
Cinder blocks and light tubes.
That sounds painful by itself. Keep going. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I've hardly ever. Me and Country did a little spot with a cinder block the night that he banished me from Fireball's place. But I think that was the only other time I've ever used a cinder block. So I'm kind of new to it on that front, but. Being in two different Carnage Cups now, I've probably had a million light tubes broke over me, so.
Wait. Didn't you use one when you wrestled Pondo?
Now, there's a difference between used one and being got one used on me.
Yeah, you had one smashing your balls by a sledgehammer, I believe.
That's right.
And you tried to break my foot with that cinder block, bro.
Well, you tried to break my tailbone on it. What are you thinking?
Well, you know, you choked me with the furniture dolly, and, I mean, you know, it happens.
All in good fun, my friend.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Oh, nah, brother. We've had this discussion many times. I mean, it was good times, and I, you know, Whatever we needed to do, we did, and we knew it was cool, so we made it work.
Hey, I still catch shit from your Burke County fans about having Laura Lyons reverse tape my boots, stepping in those Legos and super kicking you in the face.
Well, the thing that kills me, though, and you know, I tried to get on, you know, several shows since then with him, and, you know, you commented on there about it, and the guy's like, no, you got banished from it. You can't come back. And I'm like, well, I lost the match and I've been back to every show. Country won the match and he ain't been back since.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to sound like a greedy bastard, but, you know.
Then shut up right now.
No, I'm just saying, you know, he always books us in some crazy shit. And it's like, you know, just like you, you've been doing this a lot longer than I have. You don't do this shit anymore without feeling like you're going to be compensated for it, you know? When you're young and dumb, you know, and you're first starting out and you think this shit's cool, yeah, well, I'd say it is cool, but you think that, you know, like the hardcore stuff is, you know, a blast. But then once you get up there in age and you've been doing it for a while, you know, it's like, you know, this stuff takes a toll on your body a lot more than it used to, and you want to make sure that, you know, you feel that when you're sitting there and you're at a show, you show up at 5 o'clock, you know, leave there till 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, you want to feel like there's a reason you were there. But so, I mean, you know, we do it to entertain the fans, but still, entertainment isn't going to put gas in our car. And I know you drove a lot longer than I did to come to those shows, and I know a lot of the other parts of entertainment were getting paid at those shows, and I didn't feel that we were putting on more of a, I mean, we were putting our bodies on the line for this stuff, and we couldn't even get, you know, even a little bit of a rub, you know?
I'm with you. I understand totally.
I mean, like I said, it's not all about the money. We do this because we love it, but the fact of the matter is you can't get to do it, if we, you know, because you love it, if you can't get your vehicle there, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, you were driving a lot farther than I was. and you were going through some dumb shit. I mean, he booked you in some dumb shit. I hate Legos because of that match. That Legos suck. I used to step on them and hated them. But once you've been slammed off the second ropes into a pile of them, you know, I look at Legos and my, you know, my spine shrivels up. But that's
how
do
Legos
feel? Legos suck. Let me tell you, I've had thumbtacks on my back, and I would much rather have those than Legos. Because thumbtacks go in a little bit, you know, and that's it. Legos have all the sharp edges and jagged, and it's just, it sucks. I don't know how Terry feels the same way, but.
So, Terry, how long have you been off and on doing hardcore matches?
Man, me and the Burke County boys, man, we put it on the map regionally here, you know, back in, you know, probably mid-1999,
2000. Wow. So what's the craziest thing you've ever been hit with on one of these matches?
The craziest?
Yeah. What's the craziest thing ever happened to one of these matches?
Well, I can say that it didn't happen to me, but I witnessed it. I was 10 feet from it when it happened. This guy got hit with a stuffed blowfish.
Blowfish?
A blowfish, yes, a puffer fish.
Oh.
Yeah,
those are the fish that blow up, and they have, like, spikes that come out of them that are like needles.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Mm.
And, you know, while they're alive, they're poisonous.
Jeez.
But the guy, it was at Carnage Cup, of all places. They had a little kitty fishing pole, and the guy hooked it to it, and the guy wheeled it around like a ball and chain and smacked dude in the back with it a couple times. And, yeah, not me.
Wow. Kids, don't try this at home. That fits in right there. Wow.
They haven't been really too much I haven't been hit with. I mean, you know, freaking tables and kitchen sinks and Nintendos and VCRs and cheese graters, and I mean, just you probably name it, I've probably been hit by it.
Wow.
Yeah, one thing I'm glad I've never done is have to deal with that new crap they got out, like the spider web trampoline frame with the barbed wire and everything.
Yeah. I missed that one. I kind of threw Mike Levy into it that night, but I didn't want nothing to do with that.
Yeah, there's just, you know, like, I watch a lot of the stuff, like, with CZW and stuff like that, and, you know, there's just some stuff, like, they had that, it was supposed to be a bed of nails, but it was made out of syringes.
We had one of those at Carnage Cup last year.
That is just, I mean, why? I mean, it's one thing to hurt your body, you know, from the entertainment and others. That has, I mean, you can have one of those things snapped off into you or puncture something vital, you know. I don't understand. People come up with these inventions, but it's like, okay, most of them that come up with them don't have to have it used on them, so they think it's cool. But it's like, I just don't understand. It sometimes it goes a little bit too far, I think.
Yeah, I think there has to be a line that you draw, and getting falling on top of syringes, the junkie in that back alley hardcore match is something that just doesn't need to hit wrestling anytime soon.
Well, oddly enough, we had that discussion the other night on the Fan Deathmatch site with John Wayne Murdoch and Kevin Brennan, the guy that owns Deep South down where Carnage Cup is, and Kevin says that the next Carnage Cup coming up early part of next year is going to be for people that does a lot more than just the regular light tubes and barbed wire and thumbtacks gig, you know. And the main event last time had freaking like this barrel of like explosive fireworks, and they lit those things off, and the guy got blasted by them things, and there was two bumps in the razor wire, and, you know, that to me is just nuts.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, none of us are making a living doing this.
No, and, we're not. I mean, we could be honest with each other.
Yeah, we all have families. We all have jobs. It's like, you know,
y'all got to get up and go to the shoot job the next morning, too.
Yeah, I don't mind going hard, a little hardcore, you know. I definitely don't have a problem with guys who know how to do it like you. But, you know, all it takes is, like, especially, taking bumps in the razor wire. How easy is it to cut a carotid artery or your wrists or any of your arteries in your legs? They can kill you within minutes. It's like, you know, it's not like a lot of these places have, you know, medical personnel and ambulances standing by, you know. So it's like you could seriously die. I mean, it's one thing to die taking a fall off a rope or something like that. But when you purposely put yourself in a position where, you know, you can seriously, you know, be fatal just with simple stuff used around the ring like that, I mean, you got to be a dumb shit, especially if you're not getting paid that much.
What was your worst cut?
Well, I've had three, and they've all been screwed up chair shots. People wrapping the chairs over the top of my head and hitting me with the backrest part. But that's by far the worst. I've had it happen three times, and the first time was probably around 2000, and it was oddly enough on my birthday. And man, it was laid open. It took 12 stitches on the inside to pull it together, and 12 on the outside to hold it together.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's just, I just don't understand. I mean, it's just like Mick Foley said, you know, it's not that he liked pain, but he was just able to take a lot of it very well. But, you know, he was able to make a living doing it. But it's like I watch these guys nowadays, and it's like, you know, there's other ways to prove that you're a badass or that, you know, you're a tough son of a bitch. But risking the life of your, I mean, the well-being of your family and your own personal life involved just to, you know, have a few hundred people cold following think that you're some god is, I don't see it being worth it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everything that I've basically incurred has been an accident. I mean, as far as that stuff, the absolute worst probably was early this year when I broke my foot at Carnage Cup. And the thing with that was, I don't even know how it happened. It just happened. And, you know, I mean, I couldn't be mad about it. I mean, it just, like I said, it just happened. But, I mean, as far as, you know, stuff that, you know, accidents or anything like that, those were definitely the worst. But, you know, just other stuff that just happens, I mean, we all know it going in that the chance is there, but that's why we go in and do it.
Well, yeah, you know, what we do normally is, you know, especially even a little bit of hardcore, is basically control chaos. But, you know, when you start adding fire and things with sharp edges and fringes, that's stuff that you can't control because it's an unpredictable, you know, unpredictable object. You could think that you got it set up a certain way for you to go through it, but it could change position at any moment in time and seriously kill you or injure you or maim you or cause you to not be able to walk again or, you know. I just don't understand what goes through people's heads. It's like, I mean, it's like Colt 45. The things I've seen that kid take would kill normal people. But I'll tell you what, he takes an ass with him like a champ.
Yeah, and, you know, that kid, we've meshed since day one, and that kid's never told me no or that he didn't want to do something, and everything I've wanted to suggest and do, he went right along with it. And, you know, that speaks volume, but with his age and his size on how, you know, trusting of a guy he is to put it out there, you know? And
well, I think, you know, with his, you know, his size and everything, I think that, I don't know, I wouldn't want to say it's a Napoleon-type complex, but I think he thinks he has a lot more to prove, and he hangs around with a lot of the guys that do that stuff, and he thinks that the only way that people will notice him is if he goes above and beyond what normal people do. And I just feel bad because, you know, it's just, he's going to probably have so many problems when he gets older, you know, with arthritis and just, you know, when it gets cold out, everything's going to hurt.
Yeah, I know those feelings now. Yeah. Okay, we got a caller on area code 706. So we'll see if this is a call-in. Area code 706,
hey.
You're on Carolina Wrestling Live Radio.
Hey, how come you no give your mama no spaghetti? Ladies and gentlemen, I know that voice. You guys might remember this man. He was a huge wrestler back in the day. Do I have to say your name, or do you want to say your name?
Well, one of your guests slept on my couch. Took him out to Five Guys Burgers.
Rick Mead, how are you doing, brother?
How's it going, man?
Hey, man, I miss being mauled by all your boxers, man. I ain't even kidding.
Hey, I got 8 of them now.
Oh, wow.
This is a great guest to have and a treat to have you call in. So what's going on? Are you actually listening to the show?
Yeah, I've been meaning to catch it, and I saw, you know, you were on there and the boy Big Country and hadn't spoken to him in a while, so I figured it'd be a good time to touch base.
Yeah,
trying,
man.
The hardest to try to push the local Carolina wrestling scene and trying to help wrestlers get some notice and some shine here and let people know where they can find out where the next big event will be. So hopefully if everyone supports it, we can get some of the wrestlers and the fans to call in and we'll have a little something going on here. So we're hoping.
Yeah, it couldn't hurt. I mean, the more you get the word out, the better it is.
So I applaud James Shaver's effort for definitely doing this. This is a great show he's trying to get off the ground here.
So on your topic of discussion that you guys were discussing about injuries and stupidity being causing injuries, you know, shows nowadays are getting to the point where, I mean, there's no shock value left in the ring anymore. So the only thing left to do is sacrifice somebody in the ring. I mean, how much farther can you do or go to get shock value with the crowds?
Well, I understand where you're coming from because, I mean, you watch Ring of Honor and the guys jumping out of the ring, landing on the guardrail. It's like you have to almost basically kill yourself to even get a reaction out of the crowd. When it used to be, you know, you watch back in the day, you watch Ricky Morton work a wrist lock for 15 minutes and had the crowd on the edge of their seat and eating out of the palm of his hands. Now it's like the sick bumps you have to take, you know, and the risks you have to take to just even get a fan to clap for you is just ridiculous. It's, you know, I've always said that, you know, the way this business is going, it's more about acrobatics and crap like that than it is about, you know, telling a story out there, you know.
Well, I mean,
it's
kind of twofold, though. A lot of time, a promoter and the wrestlers can kind of season their crowd to the type of wrestling they want them to see. Like, you know, if you're going to do old school wrestling, that's what you're going to, you know, have your crowd watch, and that's what your crowd's going to expect. You do hardcore blood and guts, you know, that's what you're going to attract. But then in the same regard, you know, if you got a fan that wants hardcore wrestling, old school wrestling's not going to do shit for them.
No.
Well, you know, the thing that's the lost art here is, you know, like let's take Jake the Snake Roberts with the DDT back in the day. He was the only one that used that move.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know you didn't see every match have a cutoff where a guy kicked somebody in the gut and DDT'd him for a cutoff. You know, you knew when Jake hit it that was the finish. And nowadays, you know, people take 15 of them in a match and kick out of 16 of them. Nothing's believable anymore.
You can't call them finishers anymore. You know, finisher used to be when that move got hit, you knew that match is over. Now, you know, with super kick parties and, you know, you watch any time on TV, you know the first time a guy hits a finisher on somebody, they're probably going to kick out, you know, even to go along with the second or third time. And it's like you can't call that somebody's finisher then because there's so many kicks out of it because it was called a finisher for a reason.
Well, I went and watched a show down in Southern Georgia, and they had this young kid. I'm not going to give his name out, but kid is a big Hardy Boy, Mark. So during the match, he did every signature move for both of the Hardy Boys, and his finisher was a schoolboy. So I was like, brother, if I shoot you with a pistol, I stab you in the heart, and I cut your throat, and I blow your body up, you're dead anyway that it happens. Like, yeah, I was like, okay, then whatever you follow with is pretty much anticlimactic. I was like, and then what you finished him with was shit. You know, your finisher was a setup move back in the day. You know, that's Tommy Rich's finisher because he can't do anything.
Poor Tommy Rich.
Not even he plays the Italian like a champ.
Hold on, we got Tommy Rich on the line. I'm just playing.
That's fine. I'll talk to him. I worked Tommy many shows. And that's just the truth. I mean, Tommy paid his dues in the business and that, but, you know, let's be honest, you know, that's all he can do anymore for a finisher. But you got a young kid that, you know, hit 17 planches, a senton to the outside, and then he's going to use that for the finisher. I was like, do you know how much sense that match made? He's like, well, the crowd loved it. I was like, the crowd popped when you did those spots, but in between there, you could hear crickets. I was like, you're not telling a story. What's your story? What's your gimmick? He's like, well, my name's so-and-so. I was like, well, that's great.
You know, the crowds pop when they're watching a movie, and a martial arts star does a really cool kick and stuff, you know, but if kids would learn their history, I mean, back in the day when a suplex was a finishing move, you know, getting thrown over the top rope got you disqualified. You know, 20 second out of the ring counts, you know. It's like now it's not more about if you can wrestle, it's about how many flips you can do and you know, how far you can jump and
how many high spots you can do.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, that's what's killing the business. I mean, when I trained with Susan Green, we never used the ropes. All we did was chain wrestling and submission wrestling. You know, and other stuff come later on, but, you know, we were taught to go out there and tell a story. You know, if I'm going to work Big Country in a match, you know, there has to be a reason for the crowd to love one of us and a reason for the crowd to hate one of us. And then the crowd kind of dictates the match, but ultimately there has to be drama in the match and reason for them to care about either one of us, whether it's hate, them hating us or loving us. And that's lost nowadays.
A lot of the guys book their matches according to what they think the guys in the back, you know, would think is cool. They forget that there's people. The only reason why they're able to go out there and do that is because the fans have paid their hard-earned money to go sit in them seats, you know, and they don't worry about what they want or, you know. A lot of times, I've said this before, you know, you watch guys during intermission when they're selling their stuff. You know, I know they're out there to make money, but they treat their fans more like customers than they are fans, you know. And people remember that stuff. A little kid wants to come up and they want you to be the hero that they think you are. And when you warm up and you start trying to talk to the guy and all the guy's trying to do is just sell you merch and doesn't, you know, acknowledge that you just paid your hard-earned money for come see him, I think that's like rather disrespectful. And
I got a story I can tell about that.
So we've been in the business a while. I mean, I started in '95. I know Country's been in the business a while, and you know, I know Joey's been in the business a while. I don't, you know, I've never met you, so I don't know your background.
I'm 13 years in the biz myself. Yeah, we got a lot. We got combined wrestling knowledge of decades in there.
How many locker rooms have you sat in where you've seen young guys come back after the match throwing their gear around because one of their spots was missed?
Mm-hmm. Too many.
They didn't get their stuff in.
Yeah, it's like, dude, the crowd don't know. They don't know what you have planned. Your job is to go out there and entertain them.
Well, not just that. It's the lack of respect in the locker room. Guys, you know, I try to stress to guys, watch the match, all the matches before you so you don't go out there and do the same exact crap that everybody else just did out there, the same cutoffs, the same setup to the finish, the same double down, you know, and, you know, go and ask the people after you that are the matches after you what they're doing for a finish, what they're, you know, what they're doing for a cutoff, you know, so people don't have to watch. That's what I hate about a lot of these spot shows is, you know, there's no variety. There's no characters. There's nothing, you know. It's just the same guys looking the same, doing the same exact stuff, the same exact spots. And, you know, crowds are going to get bored of that after a while. And, you know, that's why I love the characters. I love the entertainment value. I mean, people forget this stuff's supposed to be fun. And all they care about is, you know, how many flips they can do before they land on a guy. And a lot of it is not, you know, this business is set on 50-50. You know, you go in there and you give yourself to your opponent. You know, you're supposed to know that he's going to, you know, keep you safe and make sure you walk out of there on your own 2 feet. But a lot of this crap you see, I don't see how it's protecting your opponent at all. I watched a guy do a Styles Clash. Anybody that knows what that is, your arms are locked. You can't protect your face or your chest. And he did a moonsault off the top rope with the guy in a Styles Clash and landed it. And it's like, how are you protecting your opponent at that point? And now that's just basically getting your shit in and not caring about anybody else's safety, just making sure that you got your spot.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, though, a lot of us, I'm going to say workers, because there's a difference to me between a worker and a wrestler.
Yes, there definitely is, please.
A lot of us are to blame for it, though, because we'll go work these spot shows with these promoters that have no business running wrestling shows, and they'll put any shit in the ring. And by us being there, we halfway legitimize what they're doing. You know, and it's not helping the business. And I've been, you know, as guilty as anybody has. You know, I'm not going to point the finger at anybody else, you know, without pointing at myself. I've done it, you know, and looking back is like, you know, what I've done is a disservice to wrestling.
Well, you work some of the, like, especially when I know places around here in the, you know, South Carolina and stuff where a lot of us went, and a lot of the guys get to go there and cut their teeth, you know, and get ring time and stuff. But once you learn your craft and learn the business, it's, you wake up and you see that, like, okay, I spent my time here to get my, you know, get my ring time in, but now it's like you see that how much it can hurt a place and how much it hurts kids, because, you know, they teach them a few, you know, few of the basics, you know, tell them to buy a pair of boots and come back the next week and they'll put them in the show. And that's, you know, like I talk about safety, that's how people get hurt, and that's how people, you know, their careers get cut short, and, you know, sometimes their lives get cut short. And, you know, like I said, we're not making a living doing this in the Indies. We all got shooting jobs to go to. We all got families to support, and, you know, we got lives to lead. And, you know, safety is my number one goal now. So there's a lot of times I'll turn down bookings because I know that if I go there, you know, I'm big enough to be able to protect myself, but there's a lot of times where stuff, you know, is out of your hands and you can't control it. And I would rather turn down, even if it's a good paying booking, to make sure that, you know, I don't end up in a place where I don't want to be.
Yeah, because, I mean, that promoter or that guy you're working, they're not going to make a mortgage payment for you.
Exactly.
You know, and, you know, over the years, you know, there have been promotions that come and go, and for the most part, the people who shouldn't be in the business, eventually they get weaned out. But, you know, there are a few who, they make a living off it. They run shows every Saturday night. They don't pay the boys anything. And ultimately, the show's about them. And, you know, we all you know, have been around shows like that.
Yeah, they don't pay the boys anything, but then they get mad when, after they get a little bit of experience, they want to venture off and, you know, go get, you know,
they
actually
get mad when they don't get something.
Yeah, I can remember many shows like that. Well, not many. That's one thing I'm proud to say over the years. I've only been stiffed on pay maybe 5 times out of 13 years, which is too many for anybody, but it's not a bad statistic compared to a lot of other people.
Well, what really screws it up is you have promotions that are actually starting to do good, and they suddenly got this idea that they have to start bringing in names. So they start sacrificing the people who keep the doors open, their pay to bring these names in. And then suddenly when the crowds dip from 300 or 400 people like they were drawing regularly to 70 or 80, you know, they're looking around like, you know, hey, nobody's loyal to me. Well, hell, you weren't loyal to me when you started cutting off my money.
Yeah, me and Nugs know firsthand a company like that. We, you know, first show we did in Tremont Music Hall, we drew 400 people with no names.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, you know, it was like 3 or 4 names were on the show, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I had to pay them. You know, it's like, well, you know, they're here and gone for one show. We're still going to be here. And
sure.
Like,
or give us the option in advance. I mean, me and Country worked the show. I'm not going to bring the promoter's name up, but waits till we get to the building to tell us, hey, the money for tonight I used to run a newspaper ad because I'm bringing this name in, so all I have is this money right here, and if you guys don't need it, I'd appreciate you not taking it, but if, you know, you did, you do need the money, you know, maybe...
I remember this story quite well.
You know,
I was the only one that went out and put my hand out.
You know, hey, you know, take what you need, but, you know, make sure, you know, another brother gets it if he needs it.
Yeah, and
you know,
if I believe that name that we all were supposed to sacrifice our pay for ended up no-showing.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, memories.
Wow, a lot of them.
You know, I mean,
wow, a lot of them.
You know, then a lot of time you try your best to do shows the right way, and they blow up in your face. I mean, I ran shows here in Georgia, Country tell you. I did everything I could to make the show successful, but I had a partner that didn't want to do anything. And
that made for a rough friendship.
I mean, hell, I was paying Country out of my pocket because I'm a man of my word. I told him this is what I could pay him. I paid him what I promised him. I made sure he always ate well when he was here.
But he neglected to tell me that he was paying me out of his pocket, or else I'd have told him to keep it.
Well, that's... You know, I was taught that, you know, your word, your bond, and if I bring people in that I consider friends, I take care of my friends. I mean, did the same thing with Abel and Gunner when he first started, ran some shows down in South Georgia. You know, money wasn't at the door the way it was supposed to be. I paid them out of my pocket. So that's how I was taught you take care of your business.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Yeah, unfortunately, we like none of us do this for the money. But when it comes down to it, I mean, you got to at least be able to cover my gasoline. I got to be able to buy a sloppy burger at the drive-thru on the way home. I mean,
hey.
If I'm not getting that, something's wrong. Hey, I look forward to that sloppy burger. I know it's off my diet. It's true.
Well, I'm not trying to put myself over, but if you ask Country, I tell you I make some damn good pancakes.
Oh, most definitely.
Pancakes at Rick's house.
You know, I would work for you again in a heartbeat. That was, I mean, you know, when I first met Rick, you know, he was very respectful. I believe you were the first one to teach me what it took to get some good color my first time. And, you know, when he asked me to come down and work for him, I was honored. And, you know, first time we got to step in the ring together, I think he smacked me so hard in my jaw, I kind of looked like Daffy Duck on the Looney Tunes cartoons spinning around my head.
Yeah,
but,
I was honored to manage him as well with his tag team partner. That was a short run, but God, I wish we could have had a longer run. We started out fun there.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we got got over with the crowd, and, you know, we made sure you got your sign in. We got our sign in, and, you know.
We told a great story out there. I mean, that was the reason we were out there. And then you got pulled out from under me. I was like,
it was
ending after that.
I don't know about Rick, but I think my favorite memory of that was Josh Magnum with anybody that knows Josh Magnum. He does the Magnum Mania gimmick, where the Hulk Hogan gimmick, and he forgot his mustache, and so he went and bought a really crappy one, and the way he attached it to his face was some super glue. So the music's playing, and it was Rick, his partner, and Devlin Valak versus me, Vorta Walker, and Josh. And the music's playing, and I'm like, come on, Josh, we got to go. And I look out, and he is heaving all out in the parking lot because of the fumes from the super glue for his mustache. And it was probably about a good 4 or 5 good chunks, you know, that he had to let out. But then finally, you know, I guess he got it all out of his system when he went out there. But during the match, his mustache actually fell off, and Rick put it on his face. And I'm over there, and I was rolling in the corner, dude. Wow. It was just... anybody that knows Rick knows he used to wear these gauntlets that had spikes on them. And they were in the corner, and they did a spot where he was in the corner, got knocked down, and ended up sitting on the gauntlets. Well, the guy went to do a Bronco Buster on him, and every time he would sit down with the Bronco Buster, it would drive Rick more and more down under the gauntlets. So finally, Rick just got tired of it, and he reached up and powerbombed the piss out of him.
Yeah, I think you could actually hear me say, "God damn it!" every time he did it.
I was looking through the curtain, and I was rolling. It was just those are the memories I love, and I'll always keep with me.
Yeah, those are good times, man. I mean, hell, me and Joey had we were going to have a run, and it kind of got squashed real fast. And,
yeah, I wish we would have had a run. That was we were actually getting some momentum built up.
I think the problem with that was the promoter didn't understand the point that we were making and getting across. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, man. I mean, it's people that kill the business, man.
Yes, sir. I remember Don Yoder, the Amish assassin.
Yeah, whose music was a shoot on him, and he was too damn dumb to know it.
Amish Paradise by Renee Yankovic. That was, I mean. Oh, no.
I can imagine that gimmick and someone coming out to that music. Wow.
Well, now he calls himself something like Luscious Don Yoder. Or
yeah,
something like that.
And the guy was scared shitless of his own shadow, man. I was like, so what's your gimmick? He said, I'm the Amish assassin. I was like, kid, you look like you were about ready to piss your pants.
And I did everything I could.
How does one sit at the house and say to themselves, you know, I need a gimmick. I'm going to be Amish, and I'm going to be an assassin. I'll be an Amish assassin.
Well, I'll tell you what, if he knew how to work it, that could have been a profitable gimmick, you know. He could have sold little straw hats and little fake beards, but...
He could have done that. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
I did everything I could to pull a good match out of the kid. I mean, the kid, I tried to bring him in the ring the hard way one time, and he, instead of jumping, he tried to roll himself over the top rope, and he almost landed straight on the top of his head. Luckily, I was able to push his leg and make him land on his back, but that kid was... That was some... I don't think there was any way to pull a good match out of that kid.
I told him, like, you need to go get an Amish-style hat. So he shows up with a damn fedora. I was like... Who in the hell told you to have an Amish hat? He's like, well, that's the only one they had at the store. I was like, a straw hat would work, dumbass.
We know the Amish love their fedoras.
Yeah,
they're known
for
wearing fedoras. Amish gangsters.
Indiana
he pulls out his shirt, and it looked like somebody had wiped their ass with it. And it was like, dude, did you not wash this? Well, no. And it's like, oh, my God.
And I was like, you're working country tonight.
Oh, he was not happy about that.
Yeah, I think we've all been in locker rooms where wrestlers forgot to wash their gear, or they don't do enough events, so they figure, hey, why wash the gear? I'm only going to wear it again next 2 months from now. And
oh, I'll tell you what. If I have to work you and I can smell you from across the ring, you're going to have a bad night.
Oh, yeah.
What is it? Robert Gibson was telling me a story about him and Ricky had a tag up against these guys, and they smelled like straight, you know, outhouse. So what Robert did was he went in the bathroom and took a shit, and then he wiped his hand with his ass with his hand and put it in his armpit. And the first thing he did was snatch that son of a bitch in the headlock. And the guy's like, oh, my God. He said, yeah, you smell that? And he said, that's what you smell like. So that's what you're going to smell for the next 15 minutes. And just work that headlock the whole time. I mean, he said the guy was trying to run away like crazy. And he's like, he kept pulling him in tighter, you know. If you can't have enough respect to wash your gear and, you know, at least smell decent for a guy, then don't even show up at the show.
That's stuff that's not taught anymore. I mean, you wash your gear, you trim your fingernails.
Yeah, certain things you shouldn't be taught, like washing your gear should come natural to somebody.
Well, yeah, but nobody teaches guys to slather on that hot stuff and slather it on the forearms and don't wipe it off their hands, and then you get in the ring and they start walking up to you and that stuff rubs into your eyes. And, you know, I mean, it's already, you know, the fumes from it are already breathtaking, but then you got to, you know, get that crap in your eyes and you can't see nothing. Shit.
Or, you know, somebody who's kind of a little bit intimidated by a match and they tape a gig to the end of their fingernail and they forget they have it there and they work you for 45 minutes and you go back to the locker room and you look in the mirror and you cut up like you had a match with Freddy Krueger.
I remember that story.
Yeah, he's somebody that Nugs used to manage.
Wow.
And to this day, I give him hell about it. Abel Adams.
Abel Adams. I loved working. I loved managing Abel Adams. Abel was great. But the only problem is you could never get Abel to give eye contact. He always looked like he was looking for spare change when he walked out the ring. But when you get in the ring, turn it to somebody else, a wrestling damn machine. That's what
it means. We've had probably 200-something matches easily. I mean, we worked to each other every weekend for like a year and a half. Then we worked out every Sunday. We'd have like, shit, probably 15 or 20 matches just training, working, you know, working through spots and working matches. So, you know, of anybody in the business, I probably trusted him more than anybody. I've bled with him, you know, I've shared blood with him. And, you know, he's, you know, probably the closest person that probably on earth besides my buddy B that I would say is a brother.
I agree 100%. That's one thing. When I was at a ringside with him and him and Will Snap, I never ever, certain wrestlers, when you're out there, you just know if a fan comes over the rail, you might think, okay, you're on your own out here now. That was one of them times when you were out there, you just never, you knew if something happened, I never had to worry about nothing. They'd got their ass whooped so damn bad. You just knew that. Certain wrestlers. I felt that way when I was with Big Country. I never felt I had to worry about nothing. Timber, I never felt like I ever had to worry about nothing when I was with Timber. When I was out there with you, Master Don, never felt I had to worry about nothing when I was out there, you know? Because I knew if something would jump off, they'd leave the ring, go outside, and beat the wheels off of someone that could figure the match.
Most definitely.
Oh, yeah, just more heat, man.
Yeah, that's one thing, 100%. That's when wrestling becomes real.
Man, I finally got to work at Able my first time, I think it was about a year and a half ago. And we've had about a good 9 or 10 matches since then. But, you know, a lot of people are intimidated by Able. I'll tell you what, my first time I ever met Able Adams, you know, everybody always taught me the worker shades. And, you know, I thought that was what you were supposed to do. So I went up to Able Adams and I shook his hand like a worker shade.
Oh,
and
wow,
he looked
that
was at me,
fine.
He looked at me and he said, "Boy, are you gay?" I was like, "No, sir."
That's Abel.
I know everybody can picture that. He said, "Boy, are you gay?" I said, "No, sir, I'm not." He said, "Well, you shook my hand like you wanted to. I wasn't sure if you wanted to, to work me or kiss me. And I was like, well, no, sir, I was just taught that way. He said, well, let me tell you something. He said, if you ever shake my hand like that again, he said, I'll beat the shit out of you. He said, you shake my hand like a man. And from then on, every time we shake somebody's hand, it's a, you know, because I understand it's about how hard you work. And if you shake somebody's hand like you are a light worker and you go in there and stiff the shit out of them, they're going to consider it a shoot and they're going to beat the hell out of you. So, you know, especially when I get in there with the young kids that I know have been taught to work shake, and I go up to shake their hand and I grab it like a death grip, and their eyes look like they're about to pop out of their head.
Well, have you ever heard, I mean, if you've worked in many locker rooms with Abel and Will, have you ever heard the working at the church story? They did a benefit show for a church one time, and someone approached the ring during the match, came right up on the ring apron, and Will and Abel just stomped the shit out of the guy. And the match is over, and found out after the match is over that this was the referee. This wasn't a referee. This was the reverend, the preacher of the church. I guess nobody told him that if you come over the rail, you're in no man's land. You're going to get what you get. Yeah, they did a church benefit and beat the shit out of the damn minister.
I bet you didn't run up on anybody's ring anymore.
I guarantee they reeled it. They learned from off the hard way. You don't do that.
Oh, you know, that's why they tell you at the beginning of the event, you know, stay in your seat. Oh, you know, if you want to get up out of your seat, but stay on the other side, because once you cross over there, you're in our world, and we're going to go home safe one way or the other. You know, and, yeah, I think people forget that, and they get so caught up, especially, I really have a problem out of guys that go there with their girlfriends, and they want to sit there and, you know, the girls are oohing and aahing over the guys in the ring, and I guess their boyfriend gets a little jealous, so he's gonna. You remember that guy? No, he's at Inkfest.
Oh yeah,
the big jacked up dude that moved the guardrail out of the way. I turn around and I drop the belt I had in my hand. I was prepared to, you know, I'm not saying I would kick the guy's ass. I'm not saying he would kick my ass, but you know, I was about to hit him first and hit him hard. But luckily, he came to his senses and backed up. But yeah, most of the time I have problems with the guys with their girlfriends. You know, they want to sit there and act all big and bad. But they're the funniest ones to diss and, you know, shut up.
Oh, yeah. They're the best ones. Because they're not hard to work at all. All you got to do is look at them. They're already mad already. You just got to throw gasoline on the fire and keep every so often put a little fan to it.
Oh, yeah. Stick the fan out and tell them to throw the first shot. And when they don't, call them a punk and look at your girlfriend and be like, so this is what you're with, and walk away.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're learning Cheap Heat 101. Big Country and Joey Nugs.
Hey, anybody that's dumb enough to come to a show with a sign and put it in a heel's face, I mean, anybody that has watched wrestling for any amount of time, what's going to happen? That sign's going to get tore up. Yep. Well, I had just worked Robert Gibson in a tag match. It was Robert Gibson and a young kid named Jackson James versus me and my partner. They went over, boom, 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 we're selling, going to the back, and this woman keeps popping me in the face with her sign. So I grab a sign, tear it up, throw it. This woman is about trying to murder me. Well, you know, I get to the back, and the security officer they had there comes back and says, this woman wants to press charges. And I was like, press charges for what? She said she had a picture on that sign of Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson that she took with them from, like, 1987 or something. I was like, really? And he's like, yeah. I said, well, Robert Gibson's sitting out there at the gimmick table. Tell her to go get another one.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Don't put a sign in the guy's face and don't expect it, you know, something to happen.
This has been one heck of an evening. I like this. We just got wrestlers. This turned into the wrestling roundtable, just talking about random things that we enjoy or don't enjoy about pro wrestling. James is over there probably like, oh, my God, he didn't get a chance to answer a crowd's question. You okay?
I won't control the interview, that's for sure. You guys handle it well.
I mean, you get dominant forces like pro wrestlers on the line. You don't really have to control an interview. It controls itself.
I'm sure James is entertained.
I'm sure he is.
Well, fellas, I hate to be a party pooper, but I got to get up for work at 4:30 in the morning. So I'll
think of that.
I'm going to have to bid y'all farewell. Rick, is really good to hear from you, man. Please keep in touch with me. Nugs, always a pleasure.
Yes,
Terry, I will see you Friday, brother.
Yeah, you might see me Friday, too. I might show up and do one of those Lakers appearances and sit in the front row and wave at everybody.
Sweet.
You got to make sure you
just
wear your gimmick.
Terry, just don't get any blood on me if I'm there. I might have a good-looking suit on. No blood on me. Leave the blood on the other.
Make sure you wear a fedora, you know, represent the Amish people.
That's right.
I'll wear a fedora, rep it for the Amish people, definitely.
All right, fellas, you have a good night.
All right.
Yeah, I think so, too. So, James, what do you think? We ought to call it a show, buddy?
Yeah, we'll call it a show. That was very productive tonight. That was very informative. I enjoyed it.
I think that was phenomenal. We had Big Country on, and then we had Terry call in. He stayed on the line with him, and then I don't know if you know who the third guy was. That was a massive oh my God, Rick. I managed him. But of course, when he wrestled, he was known as Mastodon. He came out under
Mastodon. Okay, I remember him. Yes,
that was Mastodon. So yeah, so you had three wrestlers just by themselves that you had years upon years of in ring time. So that was just like the meeting of the minds. And of course, all those wrestlers pretty much have either worked together or know each other. So I mean, that was just a pretty cool call just to be able to sit there and listen.
So that was a very good round table indeed tonight.
I agree. All you people out there, tune in again tomorrow night for the last night. We're here tomorrow night, Thursday night, Carolina Wrestling Live. Call us here at 347-850-1893 tomorrow night. Ask a question. And who's on tomorrow's show, James? Tell everybody.
Tomorrow we have J.R. Reynolds.
J.R. Reynolds, he's a phenomenal wrestler in the indie scene here in the Carolinas. You people, guarantee, come in here, listen to us, call in the show, be a part of the show, tell your friends and family. And I'm going to tell you, James, I don't know if it's coincidence, but I am getting literally 100 to 200 people a day now that are sending me friends requests on Facebook. So hopefully, that I'm thinking it has something to do with the show. Maybe people are listening because I'm posting it on Facebook. I'm pushing it on the Twitter. I'm pushing it everywhere. I might even create a new website to put it on. But we're trying to get everyone to know about it. This is the place where people can come and hear what's going on in wrestling in the Carolinas. They can hear the best in interviews from someone they don't know. And who knows, you find out some interesting stories like those road stories by themselves was fabulous. So I enjoyed it.
We are here three nights a week, and we are here to stay.
Yep. And I'm gonna and tonight I'm gonna work on the actual lyrics to the theme song. What a beautiful
beat. Okay, we will sign off now. We will see you tomorrow night at 9:00.
We'll see you, brother.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow night. Good night, Nugs.
Carolina Wrestling Live. See you, James.